Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Simon Rollerton, Director at Aterian Resources. Welcome back, Simon.
Hi, thank you very much for having me back.
So the company just announced encouraging results from additional fieldwork at the Tataw project in Morocco, revealing up to 7.02% copper. Located within the metal-rich Western Anti-Atlas Mountains, the 154.4 square kilometre project lies close to substantial infrastructure and Aterian's other assets, including the Azrar copper-silver project. With copper mineralization identified across significant stratigraphic horizons, unexplored areas present a robust opportunity for further discoveries. CEO Charles Bray expressed optimism, citing the significant sedimentary-hosted copper potential and the project's capacity to bolster the company's strong asset portfolio in Morocco, contributing to the broader electrification shift in society. You must be very happy with these results, Simon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's the Tataw is one of the key projects for us in Morocco because we've now got 17 projects, 60-odd permits, and we've been trying to focus in on three or four projects, and Tataw, I think, is going to become a lead project for us. And it's one that sort of attracts a bit of attention with investors and other mining companies alike because of the scale opportunity. It's one of these so-called sedimentary-hosted copper occurrences, and it's hosted as fine disseminations along selective bedding planes and certain stratigraphic horizons within the sedimentary packet. And so we've been out in the first phase. We covered around about 8 or 9 kilometers length of the sediments. And visually, we were observing copper mineralization along most of that strike length. And then we've gone back recently, which these results have announced, and covered another sort of 9 kilometers. And again, we're still seeing this sort of observable on-surface copper mineralization. It sits along the bedding plane, so it's like finely disseminated along the trace of the bedding that you see in the sediment. And then you also see it cross-cutting in structures and veins and faults that are sort of almost perpendicular to these sedimentary beds. So, you know, we're going to go back, hopefully in the next 10 days or so, we're going to do some more detailed work going perpendicular across the bedding as opposed to along the bedding so that we can sort of build up more knowledge about the local sedimentary sequence, stratigraphy, see if there's copper occurring more than the two main horizons that we've identified so far, and also, you know, what's the effect of some of the big structures that cross-cut the project in sort of northeasterly trending direction. So it's an exciting opportunity, and this is the one that could have scale potential. You know, if we work on neurology as a good form of geology, you know, 50 k's away, Manisham have got their development project at Tzert. Now, that's got a resource running around about 57 million tons at a percent in copper, and it's got some byproduct silver running, I think it's about 20 grams per ton. So their occurrence, looking through data that's available, sits in very similar stratigraphy to what we have. What we see is that we've got two separated horizons that seem to be hosting this mineralization, and this is probably just a function of the prospecting work we've done so far, being quite early stage. So we see copper occurring in what's called the Adudian Formation, and this is the same as at Tzert. But then higher up in the sequence, in the younger sedimentary rocks, we find another horizon that's hosting the copper mineralization as well. So ideally, what we want to do is continue with the work along the length of the sedimentary package, but also go across it so that we can build up this knowledge of whereabouts these horizons are forming. And what also what's causing these this copper to be occurring where it is? What's formed it? What's caused the precipitation of these metals out of the fluids?
And yeah, that was my question, Simon, to be honest. That I'm sort of an awful lot of what we deal with from a lot of the other explorers would be VMS's type copper, where basically it's volcanic masses that have created copper. So can you tell us a bit about the difference between this sedimentary type and the VMS type?
Yeah, well, you've got the VMS, but you've also got porphyry copper. So the majority of the world's copper comes out of the porphyry deposits, which tend to be substantial and extremely large in size. The sedimentary copper deposits around the world probably make up around 15 to 20% of all the copper production. So the more well-known ones are down in Zambia. You've got the African copper belt. You've got a lot of activity in northeastern Botswana or northwestern Botswana on the Kalahari copper belt. And these are sedimentary hosted sediment plays. So what we see is Morocco being a new province for sedimentary copper. You know, throughout the Western Anti-Atlas, you have a prolific sort of abundance of copper showings which are hosted in these sediments. And it's just trying to work out how these are all linked together. What's the model for all this mineralization? And, you know, we're lucky because we've got this large landmass down at Tata, and it gives us that opportunity to really focus on the controls and the features and build up that knowledge to explore into other areas. Because we've got another project called Azura, which is about 30 kilometers to the north of Tata. And that as well has opportunity for sedimentary hosted copper. Some of the earlier work that we've done there has identified up to sort of, I think it's like 0.8% copper in some of the sediments. We recently picked up two new projects at Akka and West Tazalak. And again, these are projects that we pinpointed because we like the sedimentary hosted copper model.
How does the processing work then for this? Is it basically copper that is literally in sediment and basically you just have to float it out, or is the part of it that is in rocks, or what is the situation?
Well, it's going to be your usual sort of processing where you're just going to grind it and float it out. Look, it's early. We haven't done anywhere near studies on the processing side of things. We haven't sort of considered the metallurgy as yet. What we're really focusing on at the moment is where is the mineralization most likely to be concentrated? Because if you've got 30 kilometers of strike length, it's going to be mineralized, but you're going to have areas of higher grade concentration that you're going to have as your hot sweet spots. And that's what we want to try and identify and focus in on. And that will allow you then to later go in with a drill program so that you can start to work on a mineral resource. Once you get that material coming out the ground, then you can sort of consider the different sort of processes that you could employ for recovering the metal itself. But I think it will be very straightforward.
Good. So, I mean, 30 kilometers is some serious size of a strike length. So, and what sort of width are you talking about in terms of this? Is it very wide or quite narrow?
No, these sedimentary deposits tend to be moderately thin in terms of a couple of meters up to maybe 10 meters is what we sort of expect here. You know, we've seen some of the earlier work that we did down at Tata, and we sort of identified mineralization in one unit, which is about eight meters in thickness. But again, it just has to be firmed up. Because you are getting the copper within these sediments along that 30 kilometers of strike length, it's not going to be continuous in terms of its grade and its mineral characteristics or the thickness of it. It's going to be quite variable, but that's just the part of the prospecting that we have to go through.
And are we talking about this being always close to surface or on surface, or what depth are we talking about?
We see this on surface. So, you know, you can walk along the side of the hill there, crack open some of the sediment outcrop, and you can see the copper. You can see a typical sort of green copper oxide, you know, malachite, you've got some azurite. But what's quite interesting is in some samples, when I was out there last time, you actually start to see fresh sulfide as well. So you've got some chalcocite, you've got some chalcopyrite, and this is all on surface. So there's no overburden to have to navigate your way through. It's all there on surface.
And is it normal for these sediments to go sort of to a depth, or are we talking about, as you discussed, sort of a couple of meters or 8 meters is where it's going to be?
Well, the thickness is really the thickness of the sedimentary package. Now, these sediments have been folded so that in the northern part of Tata, they sort of dip towards the north, variable angles of 25 to 40 degrees. And what we would be doing is coming in with a drill program later on to follow that plane of mineralization down that sediment bed at depth. But I think what's most encouraging is the fact that, you know, the mineralization is observable on the surface.
Yeah, sounds very interesting. And obviously that length, as you say, could fundamentally create quite huge resource if it's proven up. I mean, 30 kilometers is one hell of a distance to be thinking about this for copper.
Exactly. But even within that 30 kilometers, you know, you're going to get these high-grade lenses or pods of mineralization where it's been concentrated either through slight change in the chemistry of the sedimentary package or the effect of these cross-cutting structures that have controlled the fluids being injected into the sediments. So I suspect, you know, when we have these northeast trending features that cut through the sediments, that we're going to start to see a sort of focusing of the metal concentration around these zones. And it will slowly taper off as you go further away until you come towards the next structure. And then you're going to have higher concentrations again.
So what's the next step on the ground after this?
Well, it's like saying this now, we're going to go out in about 10 days' time and we're going to start doing some detailed mapping of the sediments. Instead of going along the sediments, the sort of the strike of the sediments, we're going to go perpendicular up the stratigraphy. So we're going from the oldest rocks, which sort of sits adjacent to a paleoproterozoic inlier, some old basement rocks, and we'll just traverse up and over these ridges, mapping in stratigraphy, looking for copper, looking for the evidence of the controls on the mineralization, and just to help build up the model. Because, you know, until you're comfortable with the model that you've got, you don't really want to then be drilling holes. But once you've got a handle on all of this and you've got your model, then you can go out and start popping a few holes in just to see how this mineralization continues below the surface. And, you know, you don't have to be drilling deep here because it's sitting on surface to begin with. You're just following the dip of the bedding down. So, you know, you could have a 50-meter hole, 100-meter hole. It's not like some of these targets where other companies are having to drill sort of 400 to 600 meters. This is all right here.
Sounds good. Sounds very plausible. It could be economic if you find the quantity.
You've got a strong asset or portfolio now in Morocco, and you alluded to in the RNS the fact that it's 30 kilometers south of the, I think it's the Azra copper silver project. And it's also located to good infrastructure. How in general do you find Morocco as a sort of country for jurisdiction for business in terms of the mining and licensing and applications and exploration?
We have no complaints at all. I think it's one of the better ones in Africa. You know, you look at some recent studies by I think it's the Fraser Institute, that sort of ranked it as one of the leading mining jurisdictions in the world. It's very sort of mining friendly. You've got skills and services in country. You can travel around with absolutely no hassle at all. The infrastructure is good. The roads are very very well maintained. So for us, it's been a great destination, and we hope to be there for many years to come. It's kind of untapped in many regards. You know, there's not a lot of activity there from the sort of Western juniors and other mining companies. And I think, you know, we've got a portfolio that will attract people into the country. You know, we did the earning joint venture down in Rwanda with Rio Tinto. We kind of like that model because, you know, they take over the funding and the management of the project. We get a bit of cash in the kitty, and it allows us then to continue with the other project. So, you know, we'll see if we can pursue that.
All sounds very promising. And yes, as we said, we have been speaking to Charles Bray in the last week or so. So we're heading off to Rwanda in the next few weeks. So we'll be able to bring people up to date on what's going on there with the joint venture. And also, again, I keep emphasizing it to people, one of the things that attracts me to Aterian is the trading side of the business. And this hopefully will allow you to use some of that trading money to enhance the projects you have both in Rwanda and in Morocco.
Yeah, look, we're just continuing along the process, aren't we, of sort of building the company. We're putting the foundation blocks into place. Started with Rwanda, expanded out into Morocco, looking to get that trading business up and running. That's just taking a little bit longer than we thought, but, you know, we don't want to run before we can walk with that. We want to make sure we do it correctly. You know, the team out in Rwanda has been out buying some concentrates from small-scale miners. We're looking to get involved with a couple of small operations to see how we can help them improve their recovery and mining production rates so that we can put that through the trading arm. And so, yeah, it's looking very positive.
Good.
I think, as I say, we look forward to you coming back on in the future and updating the market with the news on your exploration in Morocco and obviously on progress in Rwanda as well. So, Simon Rollinson, Director at Aterian, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.